Tradio, nourishing the soul of the digital generation.
Catholic New Media pioneer and SQPN founder Father Roderick Von Hogan is currently in Australia for CNMC Melbourne, the first Catholic New Media conference to be held outside of the US. We were blessed to have him in the Cradio studio recently to talk about media, evangelization, and his own vocation.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and you're listening to Cradio, and I'm here with Luke.
Hello.
And we're joined in the studio by Catholic New Media royalty. Father Roderick, welcome to Australia.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad to be back.
And what brings you here this time?
Oh, gosh. Last time I was here was in 2009, and I just did a tour of Sydney, basically. And now I've come back because we are organizing the very first ever Australian Catholic New Media conference in Melbourne. And, of course, I took advantage of the fact to revisit Sydney, because I've been missing this city ever since I came here.
And so what has gotten you involved in new media? How far does that go back?
Well, I think it goes back to when I was a kid, and I already was doing mock-up radio shows with friends, and we would just record that on a tape recorder and just pretend that we were actually on the air. And then later on, as a kid, I started to get involved in computer programming. I was trying to program my own games. And then from there, I got involved in desktop publishing. So it's like designing magazines. And a Catholic youth organization asked me to do their layout stuff. And so I was always working with computers and with media. And once I was ordained a priest, that actually all came back when I started to discover the internet, which was at the time still relatively new and nobody had it at home. But I discovered it at the university, and I was a longtime Star Wars fan. And at the time, there was just a lot of news about new Star Wars movies in the making. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to create a website about Star Wars, about the new movies. And in order to do that, I might as well, try to get internet at home. So I started building this website, and it starts to become super popular. And like everyone who is a Star Wars fan starts to, visit the site and read the blogs or the updates. And that's when it kind of clicked. It's like these new media are a wonderful tool to reach out to people, even people beyond the Catholic realm. And so I started to build Catholic websites, and from there I studied for 2 years in Rome and actually learned how to do radio and television production. And when I came back, that became my main job. My bishop asked me to work almost full-time in new media, and that's what I've been doing since 2005.
Now, we hear a lot all the time about how the new media can help the church evangelize, but how exactly does it do that? In the past, the church has been really focused on the person-to-person perspective, but new media, I guess because it comes after mass media with television and radio, it can seem a little bit impersonal. How does new media help with evangelization efforts of the church?
Well, I actually think that new media is way more personal than any type of media that we've had before. I mean, think of the newspaper industry, for instance. If you read an article and you're upset about something or you have a question, well, you had to write a letter. And then most of the time, that letter would be just thrown in the garbage can. And, one letter in 100 might get published, and then you get like five lines of a reply, and that's it. With radio, you have call-in shows, but you have to call a number and you're put on hold, and then perhaps someone is screening your question and perhaps you get on the air. Television is even worse. In order to get on TV, goodness gracious, you either got to be part of a reality show or you have to be a high-profile expert in something. But for most people, it's almost impossible to get on TV and to interact with the program makers. Whereas with new media, it's way easier to create a two-way communication. And so, for instance, one of the big things that I've been doing since 2005 is podcasting and just creating online radio. But most of what I do is audience-driven in a way that I
ask my listeners what they want to talk about. And if they have movies that they want me to review, or they have questions about faith, you know, I answer them. And I would be lost if it wasn't for that audience interaction, because they feed the program and it makes them feel that there is a two-way communication. And I think that is, has always been the core of evangelization. If you go back to the early church, you know, the apostles are sent to the people, and they are sent in person. You know, St. Paul, before he wrote the letters, he went there and founded those churches and knew the people personally. And then afterwards, he starts corresponding with them. But it's always, I think the moments that you see the church grow, it's always because there have been missionaries that actually go to foreign countries and, you know, start talking to people and sharing their faith. And I think new media give us the tools to do exactly that. And instead of having this impersonal, you know, one-way form of communication, you can really create a bond with your audience, whether it is via Facebook or Twitter, or via podcasting, or even YouTube nowadays. Every platform now offers the opportunity to react and to comment. And so I can comment back and I can learn about my audience. And I think that that is ultimately, you know, it's friendship that is the foundation for evangelization. It has to start with friendship and with trust. Because otherwise, if you don't trust the other person, then you're not going to trust the message. And so for me, I think we've never had better tools than today with new media.
We live in an increasingly secular environment, I know in Australia, but you hail from the Netherlands, and it's even more so the case over there. So in the face of that, and especially when there's increasing negativity towards the church, evangelization can seem like a daunting task. And I know you've done some television work over in the Netherlands. I mean, what's been your experience of that?
Largely very positive, actually. And it depends on your own attitude. I mean, of course, people might be critical of certain points of view of the church, or that, but most, I always remember what Fulton Sheen, Archbishop Fulton Sheen, said. You know, like there, I'm saying this in my own words, but there might be 100 people that are opposed to what they think the church is, and there might only be one of them who is actually opposed to what the church really is. And, you know, so people have a perception of the church, and certain think in terms of cliches. And if you're able to break through that and show another approach, if you're, you know, friendly and you want to communicate and you want to reach out and you want to explain and you're patient and you try to dialogue, over time that will win people over. And, you know, I've been in talk shows where I got attacked and sometimes even ridiculed. And what I try to do is always never to take it personally, because, you know, it's rarely because they hate me as a person. It's always because I represent the church and they think that they have a problem with the church. But I always kind of try to stay friendly and take the high road. And that almost always wins people over, or perhaps not the person that I'm talking to on the air, but definitely the people that are watching it. Of course, there are risks in getting out there and evangelizing and being on Twitter and Facebook because you're an easy target. But, you know, they're not killing us. It's not. This is not like the early days in, you know, the missionaries that actually got killed and beheaded and whatnot and stoned. So, you know, as long as they don't kill me, I'm quite all right with them, you know, not agreeing with me and ridiculing me. I know that over time, you know, just by being patient and being friendly, the truth will win it. The biggest thing that we have to avoid is to be afraid and to get into this defensive mode, because that will only provoke even more aggression. But now I think we have a very positive message. And even the hot topics that are considered to be very controversial, ultimately, from a Catholic perspective, are always fueled by love. And so that's what we have to put in forefront is, you know, where does this thinking come from? What are we trying to protect, or what are we trying to promote? But always formulate these things in positive terms that people can understand. And even if they might not agree, I try to explain it in a way that they at least can, you know, see our point of view and kind of, you know, see where it's coming from.
So you consider yourself to be a geek priest. Now, from what you were saying before, I guess you were a geek before you were a priest. Can you tell me a little bit about how you became a priest, how God called you to this vocation?
Yeah, you're right. I was a geek long before I was a priest. I was very much into Star Wars and computers and comic books and just never thought that I would ever be a priest. It was the most foreign concept that you could come up with. And I never had any role models as a young boy for the priesthood. Our parish priest was an old man, and I thought that to be a priest, you had to be an old man. And you had to, you know, be boring, basically. And you'd have to love to sit in meetings all day long and get into quarrels with the choir. And it just never appeared to me as a viable career choice. But that makes me always feel very confident that my vocation was a true vocation, because I would have never come up with it myself. And it was towards the end of the secondary school. I was about 17 years old. And, you know, I come from a Catholic family. So we were going to church every Sunday, and it was just part of what we did. And I never questioned it. And I was an altar boy, and I kind of liked the liturgy, and I liked helping out the priest, but it never really. I don't think I've ever integrated my faith on a personal level. It was just, you know, something you performed, something you did on Sunday, and there was no relationship between what we did on Sunday morning and the rest of the week. Absolutely not. I would be dreaming about Star Wars, not about Jesus, and. So I think it would have been more likely for me to become a Jedi rather than to be a priest. But in when I was 17, we had these very heated debates in school with classmates and with teachers about the Catholic faith. And this was around the time that Pope John Paul II was planning on visiting the Netherlands, which turned into the biggest disaster ever, because the empty streets and people, you know, just attacking them, and it's so much rudeness. And I remember at the time, you know, thinking, well, wait a minute, I'm a Catholic and they're attacking my identity, but I don't know how to defend myself and I don't know anything about my faith. And that made me want to dive into, you know, the background of my faith. And I was thinking, if this religion has been around for 2,000 years, then it can't be all nonsense, you know. And I'm pretty sure that our current pope is smarter than my current teacher, who is so, you know, just thinking in cliches and just thinks the church is behind the times. You know, they're just great people in the church, and they must have given this a thought. I just didn't know anything about my faith. And so I started reading, started to look in the library for books about church history, and I was fascinated. And then I joined a youth group, and they were reading documents of the Second Vatican Council. And I was 17, so like half of the things I didn't understand. But I got the feeling, you know what? The church is, it's much deeper and more coherent than people know. And I felt that there was, felt like a pirate who had discovered a big treasure, and I just opened the lid a little bit, and I saw the, you know, the glistening of the gold. And like, there has to be more. And then I started, and the more I started to read about it, the more I was fascinated, and I gradually became convinced that there was so much coherence in this faith, that this was way more than just old-fashioned tradition and just something that people were telling each other. And so that for me became the trigger to also ask myself a lot of personal questions. So if, let's say that God really exists, because I was at the age where you know, sometimes I would doubt that. I was like, you know, what if I'm just making this up? We have in the Netherlands, we have this great tradition of Saint Nicholas. And around December, he will, in the month of November, leading up to his feast day, he will go on the rooftops and distribute presents. It's like the Santa Claus. That's the original version of Santa Claus. And I remember the trauma when I discovered that he didn't exist, and that it was just my mom and my dad who were putting those presents in our shoes. And so I think gave me a very existential doubt. You know, what if the same thing is happening with God? And, you know, one day the priest will come up to me and say, well, you're now 20 years old, so now I can tell you it was all a hoax, you know, it was just to keep you off the street. And so in that situation, I was like, there's only one way to figure this out. I have to find God and somehow get into contact with him, which means praying, which I didn't know how to do because I but the only prayer that I knew was either prayer in church or before we started to eat, we would say, you know, on Our Father. But I had no idea how to actually get in touch with God. And so I just tried out and created a corner in my room. And I had this geek cavern, which was basically a part of the room which was covered in comic strips and model airplanes and Star Wars figurines and whatnot. And I just moved all that away, and I had an icon or like a holy picture that I put there, and I think I had a wooden cross. And I just in the morning and in the evening I started praying on my knees, not really knowing what I did, but I remember asking God, you know, if this is for real, if you are for real, could you let me know? Because otherwise, you know, I'd rather not spend too much time on this if you don't exist. And I think that was the moment that God actually saw that the door was open. And that's when things start to change. And gradually I felt a certain pull. And more and more I became convinced that God was really there. And then through a number of things, you know, I went to a retreat, had my first confession at the age of 17. And I had no idea that that existed. Nobody had ever told me that that was something like confession. And it just completely blew me away. It was such an amazing experience of love, of God's mercy. And from that moment on, it was more than a belief. It became something that I felt as if I had met God at that moment. And then I read a book about, you know, it was the last words of the last conversations of Thérèse of Lisieux. And she has a wonderful, you know, simple way of talking about prayer, talking about God. It's like, that is finally someone that talks like me and that I can understand and relate to. And it helped me a lot to shape my relationship with God. And then that pull became stronger and stronger, and I still had no clue why I was feeling attracted to this faith. And I felt that I needed to do something. It was too important, and if it was real, then, you know, that had to have consequences for my life. But I didn't see anything coming. Nor did my parents, nor did anyone else in my vicinity. They just saw that I was getting more and more, passionate about my faith. But then again, I've had passions about Star Wars. And then one day I would transform my entire room into astronomy, and I would, you know, have these spatials dangling from the ceiling. And so my parents thought that it's just probably just another, you know, craze, and it will dwindle down after a while. And then the big change came when I went to Lourdes. So it's this beautiful place of pilgrimage in the Pyrenees in France, where the Virgin Mary appeared to Saint Bernadette. And that was actually a youth gathering, quite similar to World Youth Days, but on a smaller scale. But still, there were 50,000 young people from all over Europe, and I had never seen other young people in church, because I was the only one from my class who still went to church. So all of a sudden you're like surrounded by thousands of young people that were actually much hipper than I was. And I was a geek, so even a nerd, I think, at the time. So to see that actually it could be normal to be a Catholic, that had a huge impact. And I also saw for the first time in my life young priests that still had their hair, and it was like, wow. And they were so enthusiastic and had so much energy and were so happy to be priests. And I think that started to already kind of prepare the way. And I still didn't see it coming, but I knew that I had to figure it out. And so one of the last days I went to the grotto. And this was late in the evening, and I knelt down and I was like, okay,
I need to know what to do, because if I can't figure it out here, I'll probably never know. So I asked Mary to help me out here, because I'm sure your son wants something, and I just have no idea what it is, but I really would like to know, and I'm not gonna leave this place until I know. And so I stayed there for several hours, and at one point it must have been after midnight, everybody was gone and it was very quiet, and the only thing you could hear was the river, you know, behind me, and then there were all these candles, and it just became obvious. Like, I remember standing up and I was like, I gotta become a priest. And it's like, as if I'd known it all the time, and it was only now kind of sinking in, as like, why didn't I think of that before? So I got home and I was like, I told my parents, like, I think God calls me to be a priest. And my mom was freaking out. She's like, no, what about my grandchildren? And my father was very hesitant too. He's like, you know what, because we had all that, you know, all the struggle in the church and in society, and it was a very unpopular thing to be. And so they told me, oh, just go see your parish priest and ask him for advice and counsel. It just, you know, go talk with a lot of people. And that was very wise advice. So I went to my parish priest, and he is like, you know what? You really want to become a priest? Well, you know what? It's not really fun to be a priest. If I had to choose again, I would not be a priest. What? I was shocked. And it turns out that he was a very unhappy man and really had lost all his passion. And instead of decreasing my own vocation, it amplified it. It's like, this can't be, there has to be something else in the priesthood. And so I talked to younger priests, and they were enthusiastic. And bit by bit, it started to become more and more clear that this was what I needed to do. And then ultimately, I think my biggest drive as a priest has always been, you know, I've discovered this treasure, but I can't keep this for myself. I need to share this, and I need to go out there and tell, you know, the other young people of my generation that this is worth investigating, at least. And that there's so much more in what the church thinks and believes than what the media tell you. And that desire to communicate my faith and to evangelize has never left me. And now I have the tools, now that I'm myself, an older priest, a relatively older priest. In the Netherlands, you stay a young priest until you're 70 years old, because all the other priests are so old. But I really feel that God has used that desire to, and even the geeky background that I have, to reach out. And so now I make programs about Star Wars and about Harry Potter and about Firefly and science fiction, and it helps me talk that language, but to talk about God in the language that those, you know, fans can understand. And so so far it's been an amazing adventure, and I'm just so happy every day to be a priest.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that with us, Father Roderick. I'm really glad I asked that question, and I really hope that everything at the Catholic New Media Conference goes well, and I hope you're having a really good time in Australia.
Thank you so much. And if people want to find out more about what I'm doing online and want to check out the podcast or the YouTube videos, it's actually very simple. Just follow me on Facebook. Just look for Father Roderick or Roderick von Hogan, which is my name. Or follow me on Twitter. It's Father Roderick. And that will point you to the sources of all that.
Thanks, Father. And thank you again for joining us. And we're looking forward to seeing you on Monday at CNMC Melbourne.
I am so excited about it. And thanks so much, and keep up the great work here at Cradio.
Thank you.
Cradio.org.au